May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Keith Harvick, along with Alan Friedberg, we represent the defendant DLR Group in this case. This case seems perfect for an appellate court. As the court mentioned, let's try to focus on legal issues. The legal issues involved in this case are the law of the case doctrine and, more importantly, the mandate rule. This is the second time that this case has made its way through the appellate courts. The issue before this court, I think, is relatively simple as to whether the trial court on remand is authorized to make an award of appellate attorney's fees following both an opinion by the Supreme Court, an order on a petition for rehearing, and the mandate that's issued by the Supreme Court. In this case, the Supreme Court opinion was issued in February of 2013. The Supreme Court made the decision to reverse the Court of Appeals and remand for dismissal of the appeal with prejudice. And the plaintiff had made requests pursuant to Rule 28 and Rule 39.5 for an award of its appellate attorney's fees. In the Supreme Court's opinion, there is no mention of awarding the plaintiff its appellate attorney's fees. After the Supreme Court's opinion is issued, the plaintiff filed a petition for rehearing. The sole issue raised in the plaintiff's petition for rehearing is the issue of appellate attorney's fees. And the plaintiff pointed out to the court an issue that it may have overlooked, which the opinion does not address petitioner's request for attorney's fees.
Mr. Harvett, you mentioned that in your brief that we should give some significance to the Supreme Court's denial of the petition for rehearing. Is there any authority that would support the conclusion that a denial of a petition for rehearing has some effect substantively upon an issue in a case?
Your Honor, I think the case law in Colorado is that you don't give any precedential value to a petition for rehearing. I think that's what the case law says. In this case, however, I think it's instructive for this court to know exactly what that petition for rehearing involved, which is the issue before this court.
Well, why would that be if we're not supposed to give any precedential consideration to it?
Well, I guess, Your Honor, when you look at the proceedings in this case, I think this court can look at the Supreme Court's opinion, the petition for rehearing, the order denying the petition for rehearing, and the mandate.
Yes, but counsel, I don't think that answers question with all respect.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Part of the plaintiff's argument in this case is that the issue wasn't decided by the Supreme Court or wasn't addressed by the Supreme Court, so it's still open for the trial court. And I don't think that that's what the record shows. The issue was clearly presented to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court just denied it. So I guess for what worth that is, I think this court needs to know that that's what the Supreme Court decided by just flat out denying the petition for rehearing.
Isn't the rule that we have to apply that the court has to follow a mandate? That's what you're arguing, right? That the trial court, our court, has to follow the mandate.
Yes, sir.
But if the mandate is silent as to an issue, which it seems to me to be the case here, unless you can show me otherwise that any of the language in those four things you just referenced say that fees should not be awarded, it seems to me they're silent. why is the trial court precluded in the face of silence? And why is it how is it contradicting the mandate or the order or the order on the petition for a hearing, even if you were to give it some way, or the order from this court mandated back to the district court?
Well, the mandate from the Supreme Court to this court is to dismiss the appeal with prejudice.
And says nothing about fees.
No, it doesn't. Despite the plaintiff bringing that issue up specifically.
Actually, that's not true. The mandate to this court is, it's ordered that the judgment of the Colorado Court of Appeals is reversed. I won't go into the cost sentence. And jurisdiction is returned to the Colorado Court of Appeals. It doesn't even say dismissing with prejudice. The opinion says dismiss with prejudice.
But that's correct.
The fees. The mandate doesn't say anything about dismiss with prejudice. It says nothing about fees.
Well, I think when...
And the rehearing, I don't think I've seen the rehearing order, but there wasn't. It just says denied.
It just says denied. That's correct.
So what in that language says to the court, you may not award fees? What limits the authority of the lower court?
I think the procedural rules would be one thing, Your Honor. There's got to be a purpose for Rule 28. When the rule says that you have to request attorney's fees in your briefs, in your opening brief and in your reply briefs to the appellate courts.
Well, that was done. There's no question about that.
Right. I mean, you have to do that to the appellate courts. It's not to the trial court. Then you have Rule 39.5, Your Honor, which is the appellate attorney's fees rule, and it says that the appellate court may determine entitlement to and the amount of attorney's fees for the appeal,
Okay. Or
may remand to the trial court for a tribunal below the determination of entitlement to or amount of any attorney's fees.
Well, Mr. Harvett, the language you just read from Rule 39.5 uses the word may. I think it uses it twice, so that doesn't require anybody to do anything. Isn't that correct?
It does say may, Your Honor, but it's the appellate attorney's fees rule. So if it's not decided by the appellate court, and the appellate court does not reverse and remand it to the trial court to determine that issue, what's the purpose of the rule then if the trial court can just go ahead and award appellate attorney's fees on its own? I mean, there seems to me that there's got to be a purpose for Rule 28 and for Rule 39.5.
Well, there is, with all respect, counsel, there is, because we can't just, in general, we're not supposed to just award attorney fees unless someone requests them and says why. That's what those rules, that's the way I have applied them since I've been on this court for 8 years.
And they were requested in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court did not award them.
What we're all asking is, why does the fact that the Supreme Court didn't award them or say anything about them, why does that have any preclusive effect on lower courts?
Well, all the cases that I've seen, Your Honor, that are cited to in the briefs, when the attorney's fees issue is before an appellate court, the appellate court makes the decision whether those fees are entitled to, just like Your Honor said, or it reverse and remands to the trial court to make that determination. And neither one of those things were done in this case.
When could it have happened here, though? Between the date the mandate was issued on March 6th and the date it was returned to the district court? I mean, are you suggesting that that Northstar should have filed yet another motion in our court seeking attorney's fees as soon as the mandate came back from the Supreme Court? The cases that are all cited are cases where it comes up, they seek attorney's fees. This is an unusual case, most unusual case, because of the way it developed. I don't know when Northstar would have had an opportunity to move for attorney's fees in our court.
Well, I think,
as a victorious party. I mean, as a prevailing party.
Well, I think that opportunity was with the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court doesn't address the issue, and the Supreme Court summarily denies the petition for a hearing on those issues. Northstar presented the issue to the Supreme Court. I don't know why the Supreme Court didn't. I agree with Your Honor, it's an unusual case in that regard. We're trying to guess why the Supreme Court didn't award appellate attorney's fees or reverse and remand to this court to make that determination, or to have this court reverse and remand to the trial court to make that determination. None of that's done. So all we can look at is the Supreme Court's opinion, the order denying the petition for rehearing, and the mandate. And the mandate just says, dismiss the appeal with prejudice. It'd be our position, Your Honor, that if the Supreme Court surely knows how to reverse and remand a case with directions, if it wants to. this court surely knows how to reverse and remand a case with directions if it's instructed to by the Supreme Court or it wants the trial court to make those determinations. And that just didn't happen in this case. We're left with a mandate that says dismiss the appeal with prejudice. And in our position, anything beyond that is contrary to the mandate.
Mr. Harbat, let me ask you this question. If we were to agree with your position, how would that be consistent with the contractual provision at issue here that a prevailing party is entitled to an award of attorney fees?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Is there a reason then that the Supreme Court would have, you know, denied the petition for rehearings expressly requesting attorney's fees with the anticipation that the district court would not be able to award attorney's fees given the contractual provision for attorney's fees?
Your Honor, I guess I don't know how to respond to that question because it goes back to, I'm not in a position to speculate as to what the Supreme Court wanted to do in this case other than sanction DLR and say the appropriate sanction of the full range of possible sanctions is a dismissal with prejudice.
But attorney's fees in this case is not a sanction. Attorney's fees, you don't dispute that they're the prevailing party, do you? When all said and done, they are the prevailing party in the appeals.
I would agree with that.
Okay. And they are entitled to attorney's fees. What they seem to have done was miss the momentary opportunity to make the motion for attorney's fees in our court when the mandate came down.
I guess I would disagree with that, Your Honor. I think that issue was what's been presented to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was full aware of Rule 28.
But again, when they denied the petition for hearing, we can't give any weight. You agree to that? We can't give any weight to that denial. That's the law of our state.
Well, yes, Your Honor. But I mean, it helps to put the context of this proceeding before this court, that those issues were presented to the Supreme Court, and for whatever reason, the Supreme Court chose not to rule on them or deny them, or here's the mandate and this is what we want you to do is dismiss the appeal. What's instructive too, I think, Your Honor, when you look at the petition for rehearing, the plaintiff takes the position that in all prior cases, when attorney's fees are awarded, the Supreme Court or the appellate court says we're reversing or remanded for that very issue. And that didn't happen here. So we're trying to read something into the Supreme Court's opinion or the mandate. If the court's not going to look at the petition for rehearing for any purpose, they can look at the mandate. The mandate says dismiss the appeal with prejudice. And I will just reserve the remainder of my time unless you try to have another question.
It does not say that in the mandate, but I won't argue with you. You can read it for yourself. It says jurisdiction is returned to the Colorado Court of Appeals. That's all the mandate says.
And Your Honor, the mandate from this court to the trial court,
that says dismiss with prejudice.
That is dismiss with prejudice in accordance with the Supreme Court's opinion, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Harvard. You have 2 minutes and 16 seconds left.
May it please the court, I'm Walter Sargent, registration number 17131. I represent the Appalachian North Star Project Management. DLR raised two issues in this case when dealt with the award of cost of transcript, I think we've addressed that fully in the answer brief, and they've never responded to that. And so I'd like to focus on the attorney's fees issue. What I'd like to first do is just very briefly summarize a few key procedural points, and then discuss the mandate rule.
You know, Judge Taubman forgot to tell you, but you could raise that podium. No, there's a button.
In the front, right underneath, on the right-hand side. Right-hand side.
Thank you. We don't want you to have to stop the chiropractor on
you. Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to just first discuss the procedural issues very briefly and go to the discussion of the mandate rule and talk about perhaps, to the extent that they've raised the issue, how the amendments to Rule 28 and the addition of Rule 395 may have affected this case in any way. And finally, I'd like to just briefly discuss the practical implications of the court's decision. First, the pertinent history. North Star was a one-person operation in Aurora. DLR was a self-described national architectural engineering firm. North Star and its attorney had a good sense to include the prevailing party clause in their contract. So when the jury agreed with North Star that DLR still owed about $40,000 for breaching the contract, North Star was also awarded its trial court attorney fees. And the trial court added that, quote, North Star shall be entitled to any further costs as further proceedings and collections, including without limitation attorney fees. When DLR appealed, North Star requested appellate attorney fees in full compliance with Rules 28 and 395. North Star didn't even oppose that. Same thing with Chartman in the Supreme Court. North Star requested appropriately under 28 and 395. Again, North Star didn't even oppose that. But when the Supreme Court issued its opinion, it didn't mention anything about attorney fees. Simply said, DLR's appeal was dismissed with prejudice. As a sanction under Rule 38 for failing to designate a complete record. And then, of course, summarily denied the petitions for a hearing, and this court returned to the district court. Now, North Star moved for appellate and post-judgment fee pursuant to CRCP 121.1-22. DLR didn't dispute the reasonableness, the necessity of the fees, and dispute North Star's compliance with the appellate rules 28.31.5. Didn't dispute the prevailing party provision in the trial court's earlier statement about awarding further attorney fees and further proceedings that would apply ordinarily to appellate fees. Instead, DLR simply argued, as it does now, that the award of appellate fees was precluded by the so-called mandate rule. And DLR simply misreading the authorities. As we've discussed, it only applies to issues that were actually decided by the higher court. The trial court remains free to consider matters not decided by the higher court in line consistently with the higher court's mandate. And these rules, these principles, have been applied specifically to issues of appellate attorney fees. And in fact, the United States Supreme Court decided this very issue on very similar procedural facts in Perkins v. Standard Oil, which we discussed on pages 27 and 28 of the answer brief. In Perkins, plaintiff received a jury verdict and attorney fees under the Clayton Act. Ninth Circuit reversed in part on damages. The Supreme Court reversed the Ninth Circuit and or a reinstatement of the original jury verdict and judgment. Back in the district court, the plaintiff requested appellate fees. The district court said, we don't think that appellate fees are allowed under the Clayton Act. The plaintiff went up to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit said, well, we think that when the Supreme Court didn't mention attorney's fees in this mandate, it intended to deny them. So the plaintiff went back up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court agree with plaintiff on, says that both lower courts are wrong. First, appellate fees are awarded only in the Clayton Act. But second, and more pertinent to this case, the Supreme Court says the Ninth Circuit was, quote, in error interpreting our mandate as precluding the award of such fees for services performed in connection with the litigation in this court. Our failure to make explicit mention in the mandate of attorney's fees simply left the matter open for consideration by the district court to which the mandate was issued. And in this reply brief, DOR discusses various, frankly, relevant parts of the Perkins case, but doesn't even acknowledge the Supreme Court's application of the mandate rule here.
Mr. Sergeant, notwithstanding the Perkins case, why do you think the Colorado Supreme Court denied your petition for rehearing summarily, given that you cited two specific cases where the Colorado Supreme Court had earlier remanded cases for an award of appellate attorney's fees?
Obviously, we're all speculating on this issue. I will say this. I mean, there were a number of issues relating to attorney's fees in this case. One is that, and we raised this in the briefs in the Supreme Court, DLR was awarded attorney's fees, appellate attorney's fees, even though they weren't requested under Rule 28 and Rule 39.5, and I don't know if that the Supreme Court wanted to deal with whether that was correct or not. And also, I think it would require, in order for it to make a determination about the operation of a prevailing party provision in the contract, to have a complete record. And the Supreme Court specifically said, DOR repeatedly violated its obligation under Rule 10 just to designate a complete record. And the sanction for that is going to be to simply dismiss the appeal with prejudice, and that's it. And of course, said nothing any further. And by the way, this court is in a somewhat analogous situation. I don't want to press it too far, but in Adams versus Land Services, this court didn't have a complete record to decide the attorney's fees issue. It actually doesn't have even a copy of the prevailing party provision. And the court said, well, we're not going to rule on your, I don't think there's any dispute that there's properly requested under Rules 28 and 39.5. This is a 2008 case after the passage of those changes. And the court said, we're not ruling on that. We're not ordering the trial court to rule on that. However, if the defendants renew their request for attorney's fees in the trial court, trial court should decide it.
I certainly don't mean to suggest that you haven't met your ethical obligations in your briefing, counsel, by any means, but I just want to ask you, do you know of any contrary Colorado authority that a denial of a PR by a petition for rehearing in either the Supreme Court or our court has some sort of substantive preclusive effect?
I'm not aware of any, and the Colorado Supreme Court has specifically held that, I believe it's specifically held in the Super Valley case, which we did cite, that it has been preclusive effect. Now, we've also cited several opinions from this court recognizing that when the issue of appellate fees is not determined by the appellate court, the district court ordinarily has jurisdiction and authority to award those fees. The first case, of course, is the GM Papa versus American Family case. And in that case, the plaintiff didn't even request appellate attorney fees in this court, and the trial court awarded them upon remand, and then I got to the Court of Appeals again. The court said, well, there's no rule against it, so it was within the trial court's discretion. Of course, then Rule 28 was changed, and Rule 39.5 was added, so that the attorney's fees had to be requested in the briefs under Rule 28. Arguably, if a party failed to comply with those provisions, it might be precluded from getting an award of appellate fees. And I say arguably because in this case, in the first time around in front of this court, that didn't happen. But it's important to recognize that these amendments don't preclude the trial court from awarding appellate fees if the appellate court itself does not issue them. For example, if for whatever reason the court simply fails to rule on the request for fees, or where the appeal is dismissed for any number of reasons before there's briefing on the merits under Rule 28, whereas in this case, all the panel members of this court agreed that an award of attorney fees was appropriate under prevailing party provision, but the Supreme Court rules that the case should have just been dismissed without ever reaching the merits. And the rule amendments never suggest that the trial court can't award appellate fees if the mandate doesn't mention fees. In fact, the only things I'm aware of, and that's true, are the allowance of certain interest under Rule 37, where it specifically says it has to be a mandate, and the award of certain very limited taxable costs under Rule 39C, where 39D says it has to be included in the mandate. But indeed, there's no authority that I'm aware of that precludes the trial court's award of fees in this case. And I don't think this court should use this case to create a new basis for denying fees, especially when nobody's offered any rationale for not granting them.
Does it make a difference if this is a prevailing party case, prevailing party gets fees case? I mean,
rather than a statutory attorney
or a frivolous appeal. I mean, if someone seeks fees and says it's a frivolous appeal, doesn't our court have to make some finding that it's frivolous before we remand it to the trial court to say, no, you calculate the amount of fees? I mean, the trial court always, I would say universally, is tasked with determining the amount of fees. I've seen that sentence about a million times in our opinions. We're not going to decide the amount. We don't have the mechanics to do it. But the entitlement to fees is typically decided in this court. It could say, the claim for fees for a frivolous appeal, or perhaps statutory fees, or perhaps some kind of fee-shifting provision, but for a prevailing party, it may be different, because I don't know what our court would have to decide in this case under prevailing party. It seems undisputed that your client was a prevailing party, and I'm just wondering if that's what makes a difference.
I think, arguably, that makes a difference, because as you pointed out, an award of attorney's fees under prevailing party provision is not a sanction. So, and the Supreme Court said, well, we consider the whole range of sanctions. If this had been a request for fees because their arguments are frivolous or something, arguably, one can certainly make the argument that, you know, the sanction encompassed that or something. But here, this is simply carrying out the party's contract. And I guess finally, I just want to stress the practical applications of the implications of this. In this particular case, North Star did everything right on this issue in every stage. I mean, it included prevailing party provision to protect itself against ruinous litigation against a big corporation. It made proper requests for attorney's fees in the trial court, in the Court of Appeals, in the Supreme Court, back in the trial court, and again in this court. It won the merits of the trial court. It got a dismissal with prejudice in the Supreme Court. And yet, if the trial court's award in this case were to be reversed, North Star ends up net loss of over $150,000 after 5 years of litigation for justifiably seeking $40,000 that it was owed. And I don't know of any basis for that result.
Counsel for DLR mentioned but didn't talk about the law of the case doctrine. Why would the law of the case doctrine apply here to preclude the fees? Everything was decided, the case was over. Does the law of the case doctrine apply to this at all?
Well, the mandate rule, of course, is considered, at least in many cases, considered to be a subsidiary of the law of the case doctrine. But the law of the case doctrine only applies to issues that were actually decided by the higher court. And the Supreme Court, the Colorado Supreme Court, in Super Value said that. And if right. If it's not decided, then it remains.
But in Hardesty, it said, or rulings logically necessary to sustain such conclusions.
That's correct, Your Honor. But there's no reason for the court to, for the Supreme Court to have ruled on attorney's fees under the prevailing party clause in order to find that DLR repeatedly violated rules.
Okay.
There are no more questions. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sargent.
As far as the plaintiff's argument is concerned, there was a statement about, you know, that maybe the court didn't get to the attorney's fees because the contract may not have been in front of it, or a prevailing party provision, the contract wasn't in front of it. I counted at least a dozen times in the first two pages of the Supreme Court's opinion that it refers to the party's contract, or a breach of contract case, or the breach of contract on the counterclaim. I mean, the court clearly knew that there was a contract between the parties. And I think that the Supreme Court needs to be afforded all due deference that it knew that that issue was before it. It didn't rule on it, and it remanded, reversed this court and remanded, which is no further instructions. I think the Super Value case that it cited in the brief that the plaintiff's attorney referred to was specifically remanded with directions and further instructions to the trial court. There's one other issue that I think, once again, Mr. Sargent even conceded that we're speculating to some extent on why the Supreme Court did what it did. And that's then this court needs to go back to the law of the case doctrine and the mandate rule. I mean, the purpose is to not relitigate issues that are already decided. And the most powerful version of the law of the case doctrine is the mandate rule. DLR's petition for further review or for a rehearing was denied as well. So does that mean DLR can go back to the trial court, supplement the record, get a new trial, because it wasn't specifically addressed in the mandate. I mean, I think that just leads down a very slippery slope to say that the fact that one issue or another issue wasn't specifically mentioned by the Supreme Court means that it's open. When there's no directions, there's no instructions, there's nothing further to do but to dismiss the case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harbat. Thank you again, Mr. Sargent. Thank you, Mr. Friedberg. We appreciate your presence this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.